Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset, and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is a round two of the podcast with Natalie Lennon. Natalie was on the podcast in October 2018, so nearly 3 years ago, in episode 187, former bikini competitor Natalie Lennon on obsession versus passion. And today's episode is a little bit of a special one because we got to do it in person. I don't get to do that many podcasts in person, and especially with COVID, none have been done over the last 18 months. So this is also available on YouTube on my channel, Brian Keane Fitness, and hopefully we'll have a lot more video content on there when it comes to podcast-specific stuff. All my weekly videos go up there, but we'll be putting the podcast and hopefully some more videos on there in the near future as well. Today's episode, we take a very different direction from episode 187. We talk about disordered eating, how to stop tracking calories, and healing your food relationship. One of the things that I try and do in this podcast is give lots of different perspectives and lots of different things that can work for different people. So sometimes someone will come on and talk about how to track calories. Somebody else will come on, in today's case with Natalie, and talk about how to stop tracking calories if you find you're becoming obsessed with it. And different things work for different people. So hopefully if you're in the bracket of somebody who needs to heal their food relationship by stopping to track your calories, you know, every single morsel of food you eat, then today's episode will give you loads of tools and resources to do that. So we talk about who calorie tracking is for and who it's not for, how to improve your food relationship, the eating disorder types, and Natalie and how she recovered from her eating disorder and disordered eating over the years. Anxiety, timeline around food, so how she was able to reduce her anxiety and guilt and shame around certain foods and binge restrict cycles. We also talked about getting her period back after 4 years and how to let go of guilt around all types of behaviors when it comes to your food or your exercise, and her journey of self-discovery and how she got from A to Z over the last few years and how she's healed a lot of those relationships, personal more so than anything in the external world. So without further ado, here is today's long overdue round two podcast, Natalie Lennon on disordered eating, how to stop tracking calories, and healing your food relationship. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be doing a long overdue round two of the podcast with my guest, Natalie Lennon. Natalie, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It has been too long.
We've been talking about, now to be fair, I blame COVID for part of this, because we've been talking about doing round two for ages, because a lot has changed in your life, your philosophy towards coaching, your philosophy towards yourself, with food, with the fitness industry in general. So I've been dying to unpack a lot of that. But before we do, for everybody listening, tell us a little bit about your backstory. We've gone into this, so we won't go too deep, because we touched on it in episode 186, which I'll link in the show notes for people. But just give it a little bit of a brief synopsis of your background.
Sure. Yeah. So my degree is earth science. Once I finished that, completely changed my mind on what I wanted to do, grew a love for fitness, became a personal trainer. That was 2016. From there, I was a personal trainer for 3 years, working in a gym, building up my own business, taking on my own clients, eventually left the gym. Love for fitness was growing and growing. Love for nutrition wasn't really a love for it. This is where we'll touch on, maybe it was more an obsession with numbers and the control element of it and how it can change your body. I thought it was a love for nutrition, but it wasn't. In time, as I started to see how obsessed I was becoming with the process, and when I worked through the other side of that, which we'll dive into, I realized that nutrition and health support was more where my clientele needed help. It wasn't necessarily just exercising. It wasn't counting their calories. It was something that was going to help them more long term, actually have a healthy relationship with food, fitness, their body, their soul, their relationships. So since I've last saw you, I got a new qualification, and that is nutritional and health coaching. And that's what I've been doubling down on with clients since. So in the last few years, and it's, I think everything happens for a reason. The fact that I haven't saw you for a few years, if we had met up and we planned on doing it, I wouldn't even be in the same headspace that I am now. Like, so much has changed in my mind, even over COVID. So I'm excited to dive into how my approach towards food and fitness has completely changed over the last few years.
Yeah, let's start on that, because you talked there, the obsession with numbers, and we did touch a little bit on obsession versus, versus passion in the last podcast. But with nutrition specifically, how has that changed in terms of, talk us through where your mindset was at several years ago with the obsession with numbers compared to where it is now.
So I guess the obsession with numbers, it was both nutrition and fitness. Like my fitness watch, I still love dearly, but I was really caught up in the calories that were there and the step count that was there and linking that to nutrition and to my fitness pal and to them being equal. But we all know that these numbers are never set. They weren't equal. And I was definitely in a deficit for years, probably thinking that I was trying to always be at a maintenance point, because these are words that we hear continuously in the fitness industry. And I know you speak about them a lot and I speak about them a lot, but I feel like we probably have some differing opinions in the area too.
Which I'm looking forward to exploring, yeah. For sure. Yeah.
So when it came to the, I suppose, obsession over the numbers, I went to a dietitian. I think I did touch on this the last time, but in 2017, I realized that my obsession with numbers was taking over my life. My obsession with calories became just so consuming that I was losing relationship strength. I wasn't able to open up to anyone. I wasn't able to start my day unless I'd done a workout. I wasn't able to eat a meal unless I knew what was in it first. Not that it had to be necessarily clean, but it had to be a safe food. And it was causing me so much stress and anxiety if I couldn't eat exactly what I thought I could track or what would have me at like the level of calories that I wanted to be at for the day, that healthy eating, or even what I was saying was like an 80-20 balance, but like, you know, macro counting, calorie counting, it's only healthy if it's not causing you stress and anxiety. If it's causing you so much stress, it's not healthy to do it, even though in the fitness industry, every coach typically that you go to will say, well, here, we're going to count your calories, or here's your meal plan. But if you can't stick to that, and that's causing you stress and anxiety, some people may not be affected by it too much mentally because they're just a different personality type. And some people are.
And their history of food relationship, yes, greatly matters. Yeah.
But that could be the start of what is a poor food relationship. So they may not have a history that's poor.
That's interesting. Explore that for, yeah, because I think you're a perfect person because of the clientele you work with and your history. Talk through how that could potentially, and I agree with you completely, by the way, that I'm a big fan. You know, I regularly say that tracking is a tool, same way, yeah, as a hammer is a tool, but you can use a hammer to hammer in a nail, or you can hit yourself in the dick or the tit with. Like, it's the tracking the calories, the tool isn't the issue, it's how you use it.
It's how you use it.
And some people get this negative association with food as a result. Have you found from people you've spoken to online, particularly in the kind of social media sphere and clients, that this tracking can lead people down that path? Is that what happened to you?
That's what happened to me. Yeah. And maybe I wasn't self-aware enough to see it sooner and stop. Like, I 100% agree. Like, tracking, counting your calories is a great tool. And it is so helpful and so useful for so many people. And it can potentially improve your relationship with food. But the majority of people I know, it has not done that. I don't know if it has with anyone, to be honest with you.
I agree with you, for what it's worth. I completely agree. I think when, if you are tracking every morsel of food you eat over an extended period of time, assuming you've hit a goal. Now, I think for someone that's maybe obese, overweight, who has a lot of potential, absolutely, weight to lose,
yeah,
you keep doing it until you hit your goal, but your goal is relative. I think for the majority of people, it moves into the realm of disordered eating,
yes,
when you need to track everything because of the stress and anxiety that can come from that. Now, that being said, to play devil's advocate, some people feel less stressed by tracking, and again, it's each to their own horses for courses, yeah, in terms of what they do,
yeah,
but exactly. from your experience though, you've not seen it that beneficial either over the long term of people.
No, like when I realized it wasn't really serving me, I kind of knew that very early on, but I couldn't stop because it was causing me a little bit of stress and anxiety if I had to stop tracking, because I wasn't sure how my body would change in the meantime. Maybe I could stop for a week or two. A lot of people would say, oh, you know, I'm just going to take this week off tracking. I'm just going to take the weekend off and I'll track again from Monday. I'm going to go out drinking tonight, but it's fine. It won't cause any damage, you know, because I'm going to track my calories again tomorrow. What way is that to live? Like, we are not meant to be calculating food mathematically all the time. We were never meant to do that. Food is not supposed to be a maths equation, and it's become that for people. And I say that with such like anger inside, because I wish the industry just wasn't that way. I wish when people went to coaches for help with their health, they were thought more about actual like qualities of food and nutritional value, and yes, calories, because calories are so important. I agree with that.
Understanding them is important versus being, yes, obsessed with them.
I think so, like intuitive eating, I don't really not that I don't support it, it's not my forte either. Calorie counting, it's not that I don't support it, it's just not going to be my forte right now. It's a mix. So I like to use this term called intuitive awareness. Like, yes, you can be, I've completely made that up, by the way.
I like that though. I like
but
that,
I do yeah. like it. Like, you can be intuitive and be like, you know what, today I need to get a Apache pizza or whatever it is. I'm aware that that probably isn't going to serve my health. I might feel a bit crappy after it, but to be honest, that's just what my soul needs today. And I need to know that I can have that without feeling stressed or anxious about it. And I need to know that I can wake up tomorrow and not compensate for it, because these are all the things that I used to do. So when I was here last, I was 15 months after going to the dietitian for the first time. And when I went to her, she spoke to me about my ED thoughts, because I told her this stress and anxiety that I was feeling. And I was like,
what? ED.
Yeah, I was like, what do you mean ED thoughts? What are you talking about? She's like, eating disorder. And I was like, I don't have an eating disorder. Now, I didn't respond to her like that defensive, but in my head, I was like, who is this woman telling me I have an ED? And I suppose at the same time, I was devastated, because I'm like, I'm this person on Instagram who's a personal trainer, you know, wellness, health, and I've just been told I have an ED. Now, I knew I wasn't the picture of health at this stage, because my obsession with fitness and nutrition had gone so far that I had become very frail. Although I was lean and somewhat muscular, I was frail. I was underweight and I was under body fat. And no one ever told me that would affect my bone mass or that would affect my menstrual cycle, which we'll go into. But I only recently heard on the radio that it actually takes, for most people, 7 years to fully recover from an ED. Okay, so last time I was here, I was 15 months post being told I had an ED. Now, what was this ED? And I said this to the dietitian. I was like, but I don't have anorexia or bulimia. And she was like, no, but you are still like showing behavioral traits of what would tick the boxes for some EDs. And now I left that day going, what do I have? What is it that's wrong with me? Like, there's no bracket that I'm in. Am I the only one that has an ED that doesn't have a name? And it's only recently, and if I hadn't known this sooner, maybe I wouldn't have struggled so much with it, that there is an eating disorder that's called OSFED, that's been given like this name, which is other specified feeding or eating disorders, okay? And that accounts for 47% of all eating disorders right now. So what is it? Like, what is OSFED? And this is where I read what boxes you may tick to be someone who is categorized with having an ED called OSFED. And I'm like, this is a lot of the fitness industry right now.
What were some of the examples?
So they are showing that you may restrict a lot at times, that you may binge by times, that you may indulge in nighttime eating by times, that you may purge, that eating may cause you emotional distress, exactly what it did for me, what we're talking about, or you may be showing some physical health problems, which, like for me, and we'll talk about it, I lost my menstrual cycle, my bone density fell, my hair was getting weak, my skin was breaking out, I had no energy. So I was ticking boxes for a good few of these. And I think it's important to state that with OSFED, you don't have to tick all these boxes. It could just be one. But if it's to a certain degree and affecting your life this much, you actually have an eating disorder that's specified as OSFED, which is a whole group of them that I think they're just trying to figure out exactly what they really are and how they affect people.
I think the term disordered eating has been very helpful for a lot of people in the fitness industry, because when you think eating disorder, you think anorexia, you think bulimia. And again, that's outside of my scope of area of expertise, so I can't go deeper on that.
Yeah.
But disordered eating falls into that.
It does. It does. And yeah, that would be another kind of box that you could tick there. When it comes to the next most common eating disorder, it's binge eating disorder. OK, that's 22%. Then bulimia, it's 19%. Anorexia, 8%. And then one or two others. So 47% is OSFED, 22% is binge eating disorder. How often do we see people on social media who track their calories, do the whole binge at the weekend? Like, literally binge, and they share it all. They share all the drinks they're having, the pizza they're having, and they highlight this lifestyle because they've got hundreds of thousands of followers, because they look amazing. They're lean, you know, they're attractive, they're tanned. They can go and binge at the weekend. And we use this word like it's fun, like it's attractive, like it's sexy to go and do this. And then come Monday, we restrict again, aka we count our calories, but we restrict. So you're ticking all these boxes, but you're promoting it as a healthy way of living, or maybe as like the fitness way of living. Nighttime eating, like that's something that a lot of people do that I used to do. Like, well, save my calories for the evening because that's when I typically go to overeat. But I was only going to overeat because it was restricting in the first place. So all of these things I was doing was actually an ED, which is now being looked into a hell of a lot more.
I think people are getting smarter as well at differentiating the fitness industry from the wellness industry, because they're two very, very different things.
So different.
You know, and I think definitely with this podcast and the people I've spoken with, yourself and others included, that you're separating it because they're two different things. You can look amazing on Instagram and have the worst relationship with your body or with food, versus somebody who, you know, is very self-compassionate with themselves, good relationship with food, and, you know, and looks healthy and well.
Yeah.
But I think it's very important for people to distinguish between those two things.
Yeah.
And what you mentioned there about the fitness industry and glorifying the binge restrict cycles, you know, I think you're right. I had Martin McDonald on the podcast and he was giving out about The Rock. He was like, The Rock does this.
Does
and I'm like,
to?
You know, where he'll put up his chicken and broccoli during the week and then his monster sized pizzas. I'm like, well, it's The Rock. I'm like, I'm biased because I love The Rock. But Martin was mentioning that it's glorified online, and it's very important for people to kind of take the reins back on that. But I'm curious, from your perspective, Natalie, in your circumstance, how did you go from 0 to 1 with the stopping of tracking? Talk us through what you do now currently, because you're obviously not tracking at the minute in terms of your calories, macros, etc.
Yeah.
So talk us through what you do now currently, and then talk about how you went from where you are now to stopping the tracking. Because there's people listening, and I've done podcasts in the past about how to track calories, and as I said, I think it's a brilliant tool for some people. The same way as I'm not anti any diet, keto diet, intermittent fasting, tracking calories, they're all tools that can potentially work for some people, and you have to take the context of the person into consideration. But from your perspective, how did you go from 0 to 1? If there's somebody listening now who's in a similar position, who's, I won't say obsessed with tracking calories, but can't get out of that circle or cycle of, you know, even if they take a week off, they feel they need to go back and track. How did you get out of that?
Yeah, great question. And I think I just want to highlight that in saying all of this with the passion that's underneath it all, I'm saying it because I hope people listen and question their habits and just make sure they have a healthy relationship with food and fitness. And if they don't, well, hopefully this will help. So how I stopped, God, it was not easy, and it's still not easy. I still have my days where I tracked so intently for so long that I'll get to the end of the day and my brain will just go, oh, I know I had this much today, because I just tracked for so long, I know. And it can take years to switch that off. Initially, I had to try and baby step it, and I'd done this with the support of a dietitian. I think number one is you need support. You're never going to do it on your own, because it causes too much anxiety to stop. You're not going to be able to deal with that on your own. You need to get professional help. That's okay. Even if you're a professional, like I was, I needed professional help. Every coach needs a coach, things like that. So I tried to baby step it and take, say, 2 days off my Fitness Pal to begin with, and then have my 5 days on. But that wasn't working for me, because on my 2 days off, I ended up overdoing it. And my 5 days on then, nearly trying to bring it lower than I should. So then I tried to do like 3 days off, 4 days on. That still wasn't working for me. So then I went and I started getting clean cut meals, you know, and I'm so thankful to them, because I don't think they realize how much they got me out of a bad patch.
Yeah.
Now, although they were, you know, it's a meal prep company and the calories and macros are on them, at least I wasn't making this meal and I didn't have as much control over it. So it kind of baby stepped me away from this meal prep mindset and spending so long in the kitchen and having the very, very bland meals. And I spoke with my dietitian about this. So I had their bigger meals and snacks. Between them, I didn't track. So this way I knew, well, look, my meals are this much. I'll have 2 to 3 snacks as well. It was still getting difficult to not track completely. One day I just woke up, I'd say after 7 to 8 months of struggling with it, and I just said, I just need to stop. I just need to delete it and embrace the absolute wave of stress and anxiety that's going to come with it for a few weeks. Because like anything you're struggling with in life, anything you want to give up or that you're afraid to do, when you do it first, the stress and anxiety is going to spike dramatically and your cortisol is going to spike dramatically. You need to realize that you need to you need to accept that spike and know that it will go down once you take on whatever it is that's scaring you so much. So I guess I realized that, and it was very scary. It was very mentally difficult. I really struggled with anxiety. I really struggled with finding who I was, because I'd put myself out there to be one person on social media, to have these habits that I preached. Like, I was an online coach who took people on and said, here's your meal plan, here's your calories. I never once sat them down and said, this should be temporary. We should talk about your food relationship from time to time. We should take time away from calorie counting. Maybe we should just do a food diary. It was always just, this is what I was told in my PT course to do with people. So this is what I do. I was told how to calculate a calorie deficit for people. So this is what I do. That's not good. It's not healthy. And when it came to, I suppose, me getting to where I am now, it has been so... 4 years, 3 to 4 years, and still I have my days where I'm like, oh, I should probably have a little bit less today, because I know my calories are probably up at, like, say, 3,000 or something. But I'm like, no, what difference does it make? I am healthy. I am at an acceptable body fat for a woman. I have my menstrual cycle, which I lost for 4 years, possibly longer, because I was on the pill. No one told me when I'm on the pill, I wouldn't know that I lost my cycle. My bone density, my bone mass has got stronger. That had dropped, which I didn't know, because no one told me that when you have HA, you can lose two...
HA for people...
Sorry, HA is hypothalamic amenorrhea, which is the loss of your menstrual cycle. I am there now, but I've realized that this actually is something that I feel like I'm always going to have a little bit of an inner debate with from time to time. And that's okay. It's not that that's sad, or that I'm still, you know, diagnosed with an ED or anything. But anyone that has suffered with any type of ED will say it's something that you're going to always fight a little bit forever. And that sounds like it's so sad. And I guess it is a little bit. But look, we all have our inner demons that we're going to have our words with from time to time. And it's just knowing that you can win that battle. You can always win that battle. Bringing yourself back to your grounding techniques, you know, your morals. And with social media, taking your time away from it, or curating your feed to support how you feel you should be living, how you treat food, how you treat fitness. And I suppose dissociating a lot of your worth from your body and your body image and your body fat percentage, because that's what I done. And I looked at females on social media and I said, well, look at their abs, you know, morning abs selfie. That was a hashtag I used the whole time. If I have abs, I'll be recognized a lot more highly within the fitness industry and the wellness industry in Ireland, because it will show my motivation. But for females to have abs that are always visible, typically they're at a body fat that isn't going to be one which allows them to have healthy regulating hormones.
For the majority, yeah.
For the majority.
You want to have a genetic component as well.
But yeah, of course. And it's really important to say that, because I know a few women who have perfectly healthy menstrual cycles and have abs visible. And they are just the genetically gifted women that we all secretly wish we had that gene. So I think that's where my mind got so warped, looking at all these people. And work, like, I had coaches who I guess didn't know about this either, and didn't realize that I probably didn't have a cycle because I was on the pill, so it never came up. It's just not something that's talked about enough or discussed about in Ireland. HA, that is, the loss of your menstrual cycle, hypothalamic amenorrhea. So when I went, I'll dive into that topic a little bit more.
Yeah, before we do that though, because I do want to touch on this, because again, when it comes to the coaching element, I think it's really, really important for people to understand that based on the context of your background, not you, me, people listening, their background, you need to find coaches who are similar or can support a specific need. You know, when it comes to people with an eating disorder background who are transitioning out, you have lived that. You work with people who have been there with the disordered eating. So you're very specific to that. So it's really, really good. And the people listening to this podcast who are in that bracket should message you and try and work with you. And then there's other people who have no issue with food, that don't have an issue with food relationship, and they just want to lose a little bit of weight, lose a little bit of body fat. Those people can track no problem, and they'll have no issue. Their food relationship won't be distorted. But I think it's so important to for everybody listening to figure out, well, where's your background? Where are you coming from? And who's out there either online, as you said, creating your feed so that you're following the people who can help you based on your background versus, you know, following all the ab selfies when you have a disordered eating or worse than eating disorder, both genders. I think this falls for men and women. You know, I definitely have fallen into that bracket of, you know, the OSFED when I was competing. You know, I had a very poor relationship with food, very poor relationship with my own self-image, body image, everything, you know, bigorexia, or I couldn't be big enough, I couldn't be lean enough. You know, it falls into that category when you compete. But for people listening, it's important to follow the people and work with the people who can move you forward in a specific goal that you have based on your background. Yeah. It's not a one size fits all for everybody. And I think it's so important for people to understand that. And I'm just curious, before we jump into the HA, what was the timeline when you stopped tracking calories and you had that anxiety and that stress? How long before that started to, I won't say ease, because I know it was probably a fluctuation up and down based on the day and how you felt, but by the time it got from anxiety, stress to quite manageable, was it in the weeks? Was it in the months? Was it in the years? From that stopping tracking to just kind of your intuitive awareness, what did that timeline look like for people who are thinking about switching? And I know everyone is different based on their backstory and based on their background. But for you, what was the timeline where you found that you were better with the intuitive awareness side versus the tracking?
Apparently, most people who are overcoming AED, so I'm kind of saying this now because tracking was nearly that for me, relapse completely once when they think they've healed. And after that, they'll usually heal. This is what I was told by the dietitian who works with people who suffer with it. So I thought it would have been 2 to 2.5 years. I gained back the weight I'd lost. I can't say I was comfortable in my body. I can't say I felt confident with the weight I'd gained. So 10 kg. I'm 10 kg heavier now than I was at my lowest. But my relationship with the scales was still poor. I was still...
You look way better now too. I feel so much better.
Yeah, yeah. Like when I was here with you last, Brian, I really just didn't know who I was. Like I remember being so nervous coming in here, like tapping the table the whole time and like just so afraid. Whereas now I'm just like, this is... I know who I am now. I didn't then. And... I think I never knew if I was ever going to know that. But yeah, when it comes back to how long it took me, I thought I was there after 2.5 years. I'd gained back the weight. I'd done this trip away to Bali. We'd done like a fit travels with Nath thing. And we had like 14 people. It was great. It was so much fun. But even on those days when we were over in Bali, I realized that I like had to get my movement in, or I was anxious if I didn't get my movement in. I still hadn't got my menstrual cycle back. And I was kind of like, oh, but I'm at the body fat now where I should. I'm at the weight where I should. Surely I can keep exercising the way I am and it will be okay. And then it wasn't too long after that that we came back. We had a family wedding. There was a lot of pressure going on in the house. Well, not, there was just a few things going on. And then it led into, there was relationship issues going on. And then COVID happened in the new year after that. And that's when I realized I hadn't healed, because I 110% relapsed completely when COVID happened. I had been diagnosed with an injury it happened in October 2019, which was a partially torn hip labrum. And I was in agony for a while, as in I couldn't, for 2 months, I only walked 2 kilometers after 2 months. And I was a runner, I was a plyometric girl, I was circuits, but I was overtraining again before I got this injury. And I didn't really realize it until I got injured. It's potentially why I got injured. I was also told this could happen to anyone who just runs a 5K 3 times a week.
Yeah. But you know yourself though, you know from what...
I knew I'd done it myself, yeah. Like, yeah. But I keep telling myself, no, this could happen to anyone. Because... it took a long time to diagnose what it was. I was told maybe it's a tear, it's a ligament, give it 2 weeks, give it 3 more weeks, give it 6 weeks, give it 8 weeks. I knew in my heart and soul, this is serious. I need this sorted quickly. But to get through the medical system is really difficult. And it was my first time ever having to get scans like an X-ray, an MRI, an MRA. I had to get an arthrogram where they inject dye into your hip to see if they can see the little tissue tear. Your labrum is a piece of tissue between your ball and socket. And people may have heard of it in like a shoulder injury for guys playing rugby. It often happens.
Yeah, it's a very common sports injury in the shoulder.
Yeah. But like I couldn't put on my sock the morning after when I woke up. But I had been training a lot. So when this happened, that was one thing that when I say there was lots of stress, I kind of remembered now.
Is exercise a, sorry to cut across you, but I'm curious, as somebody who's had to do the self-discovery to find this out myself, is exercise a coping mechanism for you?
It 100% was. Now it 50% is.
Okay, that's good.
And I think that's okay.
Yeah.
I think it's okay for exercise to be a coping mechanism, just not your only coping mechanism. And it was for me then. So when I got injured, I was able to use a cross trainer. There were certain cross trainers I could use that the angle wouldn't hurt my hip.
Yeah.
And I couldn't lift heavy weights anymore. So I was just overdoing it on the cross trainer and swimming. I could do swimming with the buoy between my legs.
Yeah.
So that's what I done. Day in, day out, again and again and again. And I started tracking calories in my mind again. Wasn't really using my Fitness Pal.
But you knew from years of doing this.
But I knew. Yeah, I knew. And I actually did go back and use it the odd day then because I was just so caught up in this injury. I can't explain it. I thought I had healed. The injury happened. I started to relapse. By Christmas, I was back at nearly my lowest weight again. I was trying to hide it. It was a different place this time at my lowest weight. I'd lost a good bit of muscle mass because I wasn't lifting heavy. I was eating different foods. It wasn't as rigid with the foods I was having. But then not long after that, I realized I'd lost all the weight. I gained back a little bit of it. I changed up the relationship thing that was going on. And then the pandemic happened. Now I can't get to the gym. I can't go out for food, which was something that really helped me overcome the strict calorie counting and tracking, because when you go out, you have to let that go.
Yeah.
It's too difficult to try and, well, you should, to try and count it all. And I couldn't do that, which was something that really helped. So the relapse became so much more prominent. And I knew I was doing all these things that weren't serving me. I was starting to try fasting. Why was I doing that? Why was I not eating until 12? I had no need to do that. I was breaking my fast. I wasn't having carbs because, like, maybe I'll rest later on. I got a cross trainer brought into my house very so kindly, like, for all of lockdown, and was just on it again and again and again. And it came to when the lockdown was lifting and I realized I need help again. I have to go back to the dietitian. I wasn't as poor off as I was. I did kind of know I was going to make it out.
Well,
I was so much more aware, yeah. But I just couldn't quite stop, and I was becoming really disappointed in myself for letting it happen again. And the second I went to the dietitian and said, I feel like I'm going backwards, I don't know how it happened. The second she said, listen, this happens to most people. They'll relapse once. They thought they would have healed, and then they'll fully heal. So, like, I wish I never got injured. I wish the pandemic never happened. But to be honest, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to me, because I've actually healed. And when I say healed, like, I gained back the weight. Gaining back the weight doesn't mean you've healed from anything.
Yeah, it's relative in terms of the language you're using. For you, your version of healing was the first step of that, was gaining the weight back.
Gaining the weight back alongside my habits, my thoughts, how I treated relationships, how I treated family, how I opened up to people, how I shared my message on social media, how I felt I needed to share my message on social media. Like, before, when I was here, I shared so much about body image, about this was an obsessed girl, here's a picture of a healthy girl. And I really struggle to actually sometimes create content like that now, because I'm in this space where I just want to be me. I just want to be happy and enjoy life for a while, which sounds so cheesy. But I'm at this place where I think the last time I felt like I was enjoying life so much was back when I was in, I want to say, my junior cert year. Before I ever tried doing the Special K challenge, which is probably the start of it all for me. So overcoming it, when I say healed, I suppose now I have got my menstrual cycle back. So
when did that come back?
This, I've mentioned on Instagram recently that I've healed from this. I never spoke about it before. Yeah. I kind of thought at one point halfway through, when I came off the pill in 2017 up to now, that it had come back, but it hadn't.
That can cause a whole host of issues as well. I've had Orla Flaherty on the podcast talking about that, how the pill completely disrupts your physiology, and it can take multiple years for someone's menstrual cycle to come back from it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what I kept telling myself. Maybe it's just the pill that's causing this to take so long, but it wasn't. I mean, I was completely underweight, and my body was too stressful an environment to ever have a baby, which is why, when it comes to having your menstrual cycle, your hypothalamus in your brain is what controls the reproductive system. And that controls the release of, you'll probably know this more than I will because I'm just learning about it, the GnR hormone. Yeah. When that's released, that signals for FSH and LH to be released. And that is what will tell your ovaries to release estrogen, okay? So when my weight was so low, my body fat was so low, and I was constantly in a very stressful environment in terms of my body was under stress from being in a deficit and from training so hard. My hypothalamus said, okay, we're shutting off, you're done. You are not a safe space right now. No cycle, no baby. Not that I want to have a baby, guys, but as in, you know, as women, this is what we're told. That's the way our bodies are made.
And it's good feedback for your body being hormonally where it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like you should be having a regular menstrual cycle.
It feels good to have a regular menstrual cycle. So I wasn't producing any estrogen. And this is what happens when you've lost your menstrual cycle. But I didn't know that. And I wasn't even quite told this when I was told I probably had HA. And it's only recently I found out that estrogen deficiency, that will increase the number of osteoclasts, which dissolve bone, and it will lower the number of osteoblasts, which build bone. So if you're not producing estrogen, you're at risk of losing 2.5% of your bone mass per year. That's serious, because if you become, I don't know if you say osteoporotic, but if you're diagnosed with osteoporosis when you're only 26 years old, there's no coming back from that, really. I was diagnosed with osteopenia, which was like the early onset stage of osteoporosis. Now, I was only barely there. Luckily, I always had a lot of calcium in my diet. And I was told by the dietitian that I'm some rare exception who didn't actually have a fracture. When I first hurt my hip, I was like, this is it now. This is a hip fracture, because that's quite common with people who have HA. But I was just a rare exception who happened to hold quite a strong bone mass. They didn't understand how it didn't fall so much lower.
Due to the calcium consumption, obviously.
And she said it was probably due to the calcium consumption, because I had a hell lot of Greek yogurt in my diet. But then because I was under the age of 30, women can build back bone typically until around the age of 30. So I've managed to build it back up quite quickly in that space where I thought I had healed, those 2.5 years. And in the time in between where I lost the weight again and kind of relapsed, luckily my bone mass never changed. It was still nice and strong. But when it comes to the recovery from HA, that is where people need to hear about this more in the fitness industry in Ireland, because I know there's so many girls listening who are probably on the pill, and that's totally fine too. Like we all need to take whatever precautions we need to take to be where
there's
we want to
lot,
be in life.
There's a lot of nutritional and supplementations you can take to offset.
You just need to understand
all of it, but a lot of the potential negative effects.
But I think we also need to understand, if you're training really, really hard and you've been on the pill for years and you are at a very low body fat, or it's what you're working towards, you need to hear this and you need to know that you're at risk of this. I put up questions on my Instagram story recently when I finally opened up about healing from HA, because I only got it back in, so I've literally just finished my fifth cycle. That's why I feel confident talking about it, because when you get your menstrual cycle back for the first time,
you don't know if it's going
to
stay.
You have to wait for 3 cycles to pass before you change anything with regards to your food intake and your exercise. And just for anyone who has never heard of HA, it's really difficult. It's really, really bloody difficult to overcome it, because you know you're in this place where your body's not healthy. You're possibly losing bone mass. You're doing yourself a disservice. But like, you're probably someone who loves training. You're probably someone who enjoys kind of somewhat controlling your diet. But that's exactly what's causing this. So you have to literally stop all cardio. You have to. And high intensity training and plyometrics. You have to eat a minimum of 2,500 calories a day.
Just to jump in on that.
Yeah.
The context depends on the person. I've had Dr. Stacey Sims on the podcast talk on this. Okay. And it depends on the starting point, the length of how long the period's been gone. I'll link that podcast for people listening as well. They're the general recommendations, which are, again, similar to really useful numbers to use for people. But the context applies. So just for those who are coming back from that, you always want to have a specified plan based on yours.
Yeah. I have to jump in and say, like, this is what everyone is told. And now for me, mentally, I had to just be okay with having 2,500 calories every day.
How did you find that? How did you find the jump?
I didn't find it too hard. It wasn't that much of a jump. It was more so because I wasn't training, I wasn't burning it off.
Yeah.
I did do, I know some days, because like I said, I know, I'd sit down at the end of the day and I know some days in that recovery process, I would have only had maybe 2-2, 2-3. And I think it's probably refreshing for some girls to hear, because I still got my cycle back. But yeah, some days I probably had 3-2, 3-3.
And it's balanced, you're not over the space exactly, of a week, 14
yeah,
days, etc.
I just started to let the stress go, but it was more so my training. I was only doing 2-3 very, very short, low intensity weight sessions a week. No heavy lifting, no personal best.
Nothing that shoots cortisol to the max.
Nothing at all. That was stressful at the beginning because that was my coping mechanism nearly 100%. But we started to bring in other coping mechanisms that slowly started to take up that 50% that we mentioned.
What are some of the other 50%? I'm very curious, as somebody that has regular issues with unsupportive coping mechanisms over the years. What are some of the tools that you used?
During the time where I was probably struggling most, I was doing a lot of mindfulness, literally just using Headspace a lot, spending time with my family. And although people might not think that's a coping mechanism.
Oh, 100%.
It is.
And if you have a good family, it's one of the best.
Yeah. It just kind of took my mind away from where it would be otherwise. Basically, anything that took my mind away from where it would be otherwise. Yeah. Filling up my day with any other activity that wasn't extremely physically demanding was a coping mechanism. So maybe that was going for a drive with my mom, you know, going for a walk with my mom. Maybe it was taking out a mindful colouring book. Maybe it was sitting down and Zooming my friend, like during the lockdowns, for 2 hours and having no problem with sitting there.
Friend and families, I would have them all in the same bracket. Yeah.
Like literally anything that just meant you weren't putting as much physical stress on your body. But I did have to fill up my day with some sort of other activity like that.
Because of the time that you would have normally been training.
I'd get too anxious kind of sitting there doing nothing. I focused a lot more on my content on Instagram and making more recipes and making more meaningful posts at the time. I took on more clients, so I knew I had to be stationary for a lot more of the day to do all of this work, rather than filling up my day, which is constantly moving for the sake of it. And when I got my first cycle back, I really wasn't expecting it, because I knew there was days where I was probably only having 2-2, 2-3. But I also wasn't stressed about it. Stress just disappeared for some reason. I came across a amazing physio in Carlo and started going to him during one of the lockdowns when I was having a bit of a hip trouble on the other hip. And I since found out I have 2 partially torn hip labrums in both hips. So it's great fun. But I honestly would have been lost without him. He's absolutely amazing. And if you're in Carlo, I can't recommend him enough, Gary Nolan. But I told him the whole story about my cycle, about my hormones. And I'd never really opened up to anyone, any other profession who I knew I was going to see so regularly before about it. And if I didn't have him there week to week going, this is what you're doing training wise and this is all you're doing.
Yeah.
And now you're going to go and you're going to get that lovely tea or scone with your mom and you're going to chill for the day. Don't want to see you doing anything else. Did you eat before you came in? Did you have this? Did you have that? And just to have someone there weekly that was an accountability coach.
Yeah.
If I didn't have that, I'm not sure I would have healed from it at all. I just wouldn't have done it on my own. He took away the stress when I was questioning things. And I knew questioning things, I knew the answer. I knew what he was going
to
tell me.
You go back to the path of least resistance, which is your own whatever habits you potentially fall back into again, unless you have somebody that holds you accountable to different habits.
Exactly. So now, even those first 3 months where you get your first 3 cycles, you can't change anything. It's typical of girls to go straight into overdoing it again if it's in your nature, which it would have been mine. But at this stage, the stress had just completely gone. I nearly had more food and done even less training for those 3 months because I just did not want it to ever leave again.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really slow about changing it right now. I'm not changing my diet. I have no intention of changing my diet. I'm enjoying the way things are going.
Yeah.
I understand nutrition. I understand health. I know I have a good balance and I know I'm getting all of my nutrients, all of my protein, my carbs to fuel my training. I haven't really started back doing that much cardio yet. I probably will soon. Am I that pushed to do anything crazy? No, not really. I'm training in a way that's sustainable, that I'm enjoying, that isn't obsessive, that has a lot of variety. And for anyone who is listening that's struggling from HA, I definitely would say, like, just find yourself a coach who can support you week to week if possible. There's few people doing it in Ireland. I definitely want to specialize in it now, or at least specialize in female hormones. And actually, just to go back, they're probably 15 minutes at this stage, when you mentioned that like, you know, if someone wants to lose weight, to go to someone who will give them a tracking or calorie plan. I agree with that. But I would also work with women who want to lose weight who don't want a tracking or calorie plan. That's done differently. It's still a food diary.
Yeah.
So yes, that's tracking in a sense, but I do like to work with that as well. That's someone that doesn't want to do it that way.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Of course. You cover wide ranges of health, weight loss spectrums, etc.
But I think anyone who wants to lose weight, just ask yourself what way you want to go about it.
Exactly.
I think that
question is so important because some people will go tracking calories. Some people will go food diary. Some people will go, you know, I'm not a fan for weight loss, but some people will try a ketogenic diet or intermittent fasting. Again, there's so many variables to consider.
And if you have never ever tracked your calories and you have a good relationship with food and fitness, like it is, I'm totally in support of it. I think go for it. Do you know, just be aware of how you're treating it as the weeks go on. And if that stays positive and it doesn't cause you any stress or anxiety, go for it. I don't want to come across as someone who is just anti it completely, because I'm not. But I do think there's a lot of individuals who shouldn't be doing it that are. So when I put up on my Instagram story, how many people have heard of HA? It was 50-50 yes and no. So many women I've spoke to since have never heard of it, which is great because they've never had to deal with it. But then I asked how many of you have had it or have it. And there was a large number of girls that said that they did have it or currently have it. And that worried me because I'm like, how many of these girls realise, or maybe they've overcome it, the risks that they are at right now for bone mass loss and just not living. You've no libido, you've no energy, you're just doing all of these things for the sake of ticking a box to keep your anxiety low. Like these hundreds of women, hundreds of people. Now it was, I think it might have been 30, maybe 35, 65 or something like that, but so many people voted on this poll that I'm like, oh, I really want to specialise in this area and get more people speaking about it in Ireland. And I'd done a live recently with a girl from Sydney who specialises in it on her social media. Sarah Liz King is her name. So I'd check her out or check out that live if anyone wants more information on the healing process as well.
I'm curious, just to kind of wrap us all up, because you've done a lot of kind of inner work, self-awareness, self-discovery work over the last 3 years, definitely, but probably longer because your journey has been obviously 2016 and before that even. You mentioned earlier that you now know who you are, and I think that definitely comes across in your content through Instagram, through TikTok. You know, you speak, you know, your mess becomes your message. You speak on these topics that...
I have said that so many times since I've heard you say it. Your mess becomes your message.
And it's so true. I'm curious for people listening, because I've definitely struggled with this in probably a similar time frame, 25, 26, 27 for me. And by the time I was 30, I kind of had a bit more of a scope on who I was. How did you get there? And I'll leave that vague, because you can go in a whole lot of different directions with it. But just to kind of wrap us up, because I know there's so much mindset that comes to it. How did you get to the journey of self-discovery, or the end point, not an end point because the journey is continuous,
Great point,
to where you're at now? How did you figure that out? Because I think there's a lot of people who struggle, and I think this shows up in a whole host of ways. For some people it's constant external validation from other people, or, you know, being too self-critical on themselves. All these things come from not really knowing who you are, from my experience anyway, that when you start to figure out, this is who I am, this is, these are my values, this is my core belief system, these are the things that support me, all that external validation and constantly putting out things to impress others and worrying what other people think, all of these things tend to just dissipate and become less noise in your head. How did you get to where you're at?
I think number one, I stopped being hard on myself for the mistakes I knew I'd made with regards to what I was sharing and trying to preach and teach other people. The mistakes I've made towards myself, my own health, towards my relationships, feeling like I'd weakened so many friends and family and romantic, and just accepted it all. Just accept it, let go of the guilt about it, and then work on it from there. Any mistakes that I still make the odd time, just accepting that and learning from it rather than feeling guilty about it.
How did you let go of the guilt?
Time. All I can say is time. like, it's been a long time since I was here and told you I was over all this. Yeah. And now I'm here telling you, no, I'm actually
three
over
three more years when you were on the podcast. Yeah. Like, don't listen. I'm over it now. I got it. Oh, joke. But that's what I mean. But it's a journey. Like, yeah. I'm joking, but it's one step back, two steps forward. That's how all of these things are.
I think it's time. So allowing yourself that time and realizing that, look, if you're feeling this way where you don't quite know who you are, that's okay. Give yourself time and you will. But you definitely need to accept your mistakes, dive into your mistakes head first, root around in them and find out what it is that caused them and what you can do to prevent them from happening again. And over the time that you're going to allow yourself to find out who you are, try new things, meet new people, and maybe cut some people out of your life who are not serving you. And I know I would have heard you say that so many times. Anyone who is toxic in your life or in a social media feed, cut it out. They're not going to mind, you know? And honestly, you just have to put yourself first. Put yourself first. Time, let go of the guilt, dive into your mistakes, and put yourself first way more often. Without being selfish, you're not being selfish.
You can't give them an empty cup either. Exactly. You have to look after yourself first to be able to serve those people around you, whether it's your family, friends, romantic relationships online or, you know, it's relative based on the person's life.
And I think one more thing, also realizing that you're going to have your days still where you'll wake up and go, what am I doing? Who am I today? What's going on with my life? Like,
imposter syndrome is a real
thing. Yes, and I still have my days, especially now every time that I get my period. I have 2 days where I'm like, okay, I know I'm going to be questioning everything in my life for these 2 days and it will pass. Knowing that you will have that imposter syndrome creep in from time to time or to start questioning everything, but that's completely normal and you'll feel yourself again, this amazing person that you are or you have built yourself up to be. Very soon, because in the day and age we live in and everything we're surrounded by, it's natural for you to start questioning things from time to time. But literally just give it more time anytime you feel that way.
Yeah, that imposter syndrome, I think, shows up in a lot of different shapes and forms. I think once you kind of get a wrap around your ego a little bit in terms of who you think you are to the people on the outside versus who you are on the inside, that imposter syndrome tends to, never goes away, but it massively the noise gets less and less in your head. So as you go through the journey, it all becomes clear. Natalie, again, touched on things and I've been dying for this round two for ages. Three years because we've been talking for about 18 months about doing a round two and just kind of getting an update on how everything is going. But for everybody listening, where is the best place for them to follow you on social media? Where do you spend your most time? And anyone that wants to reach out to you for coaching, give any of those links down.
So my Instagram is the number one place where you can find me, and that is at Natalie Lennon. I've actually changed my handle since I was last year. It's been that long. It's my actual name. So it's NATHALIE Lennon _. And then last summer, I actually kind of relaunched my business. It's NLF. So it's NLF.ie. And I do have workout programs there, which are my favorite style of training as well.
Yeah, you train hard. I love your workouts and you post on social too.
I love my training. Mm. I do. Not as much as I used to, guys, but I do still love it. And then TikTok's a bit of fun. Like, if you want to go find me there, you can. It's just my name as well. But nlf.ie, I have an inquiry form there. And my Instagram, I usually look at my DMs there as well if you're trying to get in touch.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, I will link up everything that Natalie has said on show notes on briankeefitness.com and in the description for today's podcast. Also, go check out her TikTok, as you said. You've got some badass dance moves there.
I
tried a couple once or twice. I was like, right, I'll just stick to the workout videos. Natalie, thank you so much again.
Thank you for having me.
There you have it. Natalie Lennon on disordered eating, how to stop tracking calories and healing your food relationship. Really enjoyable conversation and a catch up with Natalie, who I haven't seen since before COVID. So this is a really nice catch up in the person. As I said, this is also available on the YouTube channel, Brian Keane Fitness. So any of the face-to-face podcasts that I've got to do over the last few years with Trisha Lewis, Trisha Transformation, Paul Dermody, some of those podcasts are all up there. The videos, Orlo Flaherty is another one that we did, who we mentioned in today's episode where we talk about amenorrhea and balancing out your hormones. So that's definitely one that I would check out too, alongside Dr. Stacey Sims, as I mentioned in today's episode. So that's everything from this week's podcast. As always, if you enjoyed it, be sure to take a screenshot, pop it up on your Instagram stories. You can tag myself and Natalie on there. That's all from this week. Catch you all next Monday.